Thank you, Mary Beth. And our final presenter today is Dr. Samuel Graetzer. Dr. Graetzer is the Pandemic Influenza Vaccine Coordinator in the Immunization Services Division at CDC. Dr. Graetzer?
Thanks, Nancy. Today, I'll be giving a brief overview of the role immunization programs play in preparedness planning and implementation. Outbreaks of vaccine-preventable disease occur often, but the etiology and timing of these outbreaks remain unpredictable, complicating planning efforts. Nonetheless, immunization programs can have profound impact in mitigating the burden of disease associated with these outbreaks. The primary role and expertise of the immunization programs in preparedness is getting the vaccine out to the public quickly and efficiently. The multiple pandemics and events associated with influenza occurring in just the last 100 years highlight the complexities of preparing for these events. The first pandemic of the modern era occurred in 1918 with Spanish flu, then H2N2 or Asian influenza in 1957, Hong Kong flu or H3N2 in 1968, followed by outbreaks of H5, H9 later in 1990s, and most recently the 2009 H1N1 pandemic, which still remains fresh in most of our minds. The 1918 influenza pandemic, also an H1N1, had a devastating impact on the life of the modern world and was associated with 50 million deaths worldwide and greater than 500 deaths just in the U.S. alone. Pregnant women and adults were especially affected. Unfortunately, at that time, no vaccine was available to combat this pandemic. This graph, tracking life expectancy in the U.S. from 1990 to 1960, highlights the tremendous impact that Spanish influenza had in society. Life expectancy in years of age is on the vertical axis, and calendar years are along the horizontal axis. Note the dramatic dip around 1918 when life expectancy dropped from around 55 to about 40 years of age. Several factors may account for this dip, including the virulence of the virus itself, but also the lack of vaccinations and other modern medical interventions like antibiotics during this time. The next pandemic was not observed until 1957 with the emergence of H2N2, and then again in 1968 with H3N2. Despite the availability of influenza vaccine technology at the time, national mass vaccination campaigns were not fully realized here in the U.S. Luckily, case fatality ratio for these pandemics ended up being around 0.1%, much lower than the 1918 Spanish flu. In 1976, observing an outbreak of novel H1N1 among military recruits in New Jersey, and concerned that this virus could result in another 1918-like pandemic, public health officials did initiate a national vaccine campaign. Through tremendous effort, approximately 45 million U.S. citizens, or roughly 25% of the population at that time, were vaccinated within 10 months of identifying the virus before the campaign was halted. Though this event did not result in a pandemic, the role that immunization programs could play in such a response was forever changed. More recent events have also had an important impact in shaping the role of immunization programs and preparedness, including first, the identification of human cases of H5N1 associated with birds and poultry in Asia, continuing the sporadic cases of H9 and H7 avian influenza in the late 90s and early 2000s, the anthrax terrorism events in 2001, SARS in 2002, which resulted in 8,500 deaths worldwide, and then the reemergence of H5N1 cases around 2003, all highlighted the need for preparedness for these severe disease outbreaks, especially those which might be managed by vaccines. In the early 2000s, the Public Health Emergency Preparedness, or PHEP, was established to fund state and city grantees to develop plans for public health emergencies. Most plans were for vaccine-preventable disease outbreaks were designed to respond to highly pathogenic diseases, like the ones noted above. As such, 20 million doses of H5N1 vaccine were stockpiled for immediate response to an H5N1 outbreak. But it wasn't until around 2008 that immunization programs were specifically funded through pandemic influenza funds to directly support their preparedness efforts as well. What we got instead of H5N1 was 2009 H1N1. Starting initially with the identification of two human cases in April 2009 in California, the strain represented a novel reassortment of influenza strains. Because 2009 H1N1 was not a stockpiled vaccine, a new antigen-specific pandemic monovalent vaccine had to be developed from scratch. By June of 2009, after having spread to multiple continents and millions of individuals, the World Health Organization declared a pandemic, and immunization programs everywhere responded in full force to this threat. The Vaccines for Children, or VFC program, distribution system was ramped up to deliver both seasonal and pandemic monovalent vaccine. Despite the preexistence of this distribution system, many states also organize complex secondary distribution systems as well. Also, while efficient in many ways, since the VFC program did not include adult providers, immunization programs were tasked with recruiting these adult providers in their new systems. The impact of the H1N1 national campaign was furthermore complicated by the early fall wave of the disease in relation to the availability of the monovalent vaccine. Nevertheless, because of the tremendous efforts of the state and local programs, approximately 130 million doses of 2009 H1N1 vaccine were distributed to over 67,000 providers and sites through the VFC program. This graph demonstrates the timing of the wave of H1N1 in relation to vaccine distribution. 2009 H1N1 vaccine was first distributed to states around October, noted here with the blue arrow. Just as the fall wave of disease was peaking, secondary distribution and administration took longer, complicating the impact of the national H1N1 vaccination campaign. Despite these challenges, immunization programs used a variety of novel approaches to deliver and administer vaccine quickly and efficiently, including, to highlight just a few, increasing school-located vaccination or SLV clinic participation, improving the efficiency of mass vaccination, and expanding the role of the complementary vaccine providers. School-located clinics became increasingly important because early immunogenicity studies predicted that children and young adults might be the most susceptible to the pandemic virus, and also because of the important role that children play in transmitting infections to vulnerable adult populations in the community. SLVs were seen as an important mechanism for targeting children for early vaccination. In fact, at least 85% of local health departments held at least one SLV clinic, and 33% of all vaccinated children in the U.S. were vaccinated at a school-located venue during 2009-10. Use of SLV may have also had an important impact in increasing vaccination coverage among children. In this graph, vaccination coverage is noted on the vertical axis. As you can see, states which implemented statewide SLV campaigns in red had higher vaccination coverage among children than states without statewide SLV programs in blue. SLV programs were adapted to each state. The most successful campaigns included extensive collaboration between school nurses, volunteers, administrators, visiting nurse associations, and many more. SLV programs also likely improved the timing of vaccine administration, where it might normally take months to vaccinate the population of one school through traditional office-based settings. All these children could be vaccinated in one or two clinic days through SLVs. Well-timed SLV campaigns were also found to have improved absence rates among both vaccinated and unvaccinated students and teachers. The SLV experience during 2009 H1N1 continues to change the face of seasonal vaccination. In fact, recent cooperative agreements through the Prevention and Public Health Fund in Arkansas, Maine, Kansas, and South Carolina have expanded the SLV effort and seek to address a number of logistic and billing issues surrounding SLV during the regular influenza season. Many improvements in the efficiency of other types of mass vaccination clinics were also developed during H1N1. The online mass clinic system developed by the Larimer County Health Department in northern Colorado is a perfect example. The health department developed multiple online tools and a pre-registration system to improve the organization of staff, triaging of patients by risk group, and decrease patient wait times by allowing patients to sign up online for designated vaccination time slots. In fact, during the 2009 H1N1 response in this county, 18,000 doses of H1N1 vaccine were administered over eight clinics, with 60% of these participants getting vaccinated in less than 10 minutes and 94% in less than 20 minutes. The system was so successful that it was replicated and refined for use during meningococcal outbreaks later in 2010. Using this system, they were able to vaccinate approximately 10,000 college students during two clinics in early November. Immunization programs also played a key role in expanding the role of vaccinator to other types of providers outside of the doctor's office. In fact, vaccination in stores increased from 7% in 2006-07 to up to 18.4% of vaccinated during the 2010-11 season, just 1 year after 2009 H1N1. And all states now allow pharmacists to vaccinate for influenza and most now also allow pharmacists to vaccinate for additional types of vaccines. Expanding the type of providers who vaccinate also likely increases access to those without regular medical care, often a difficult group to reach, especially during a pandemic. In an MMWR from June 2010, persons with greater than 1 year since their last checkup were more likely to be vaccinated in a non-medical setting. One of the key findings from H1N1 is that immunization and preparedness programs must work hand-in-hand in preparing for the next pandemic and outbreak. Unfortunately, from a recent internal survey here at CDC, only 29 of 59 immunization programs, or 36%, met regularly with their equivalent preparedness groups. Also, preparedness plans should be reviewed and revised together on a regular basis. Most importantly, plans should be routinely exercised, specifically for rapid identification and distribution of vaccine to critical infrastructure and other priority groups. Incorporating more complementary providers during response, and to further perfect the use of mass vaccination and SLV clinics. The STEP awardees are required to demonstrate 15 preparedness capabilities. Immunization programs can have an important insight and experience in shaping these capabilities, especially in the categories of community preparedness, emergency operation coordination, information sharing, medical countermeasure dispensing, material management and distribution, and responder safety and health. As an example, for the community preparedness capability, immunization programs can have important insight in targeting high-risk groups, building communication systems around vaccination, enlisting complementary providers, and organizing logistics of mass vaccination clinics, as noted before. For the material management and dispensing capability, immunization programs will be key in incorporating VTRACs, or the Federal Vaccine Tracking System, and immunization information systems in pandemic plans. Ensuring an inclusion of vaccine delivery devices, adjuvants, needles, and other vaccine ancillary supplies in these plans, and also planning for vaccine recovery and destruction, and identifying and coordinating vaccination of critical infrastructure personnel. Unfortunately, the next pandemic or outbreak may already be underway, and outbreaks will continue to occur. H5N1 continues to occur among humans. As of the first week of March when these slides were prepared, of 596 reported H5N1 human cases, 350 have been fatal. Nepal, China, Bhutan, Hong Kong, and Israel all reported avian influenza outbreaks among birds and poultry. And new human infections in Bangladesh, Vietnam, and Indonesia were also reported. But the threat doesn't just come from Asia or from influenza. For example, meningococcal disease remains a threat, and pertussis outbreaks and clusters still persist in many states. All of these threats remind us that though H1N1 is over, immunization programs must continue to play an essential role in developing, updating, and exercising preparedness plans in order to ensure not only an efficient vaccine response during a pandemic, but to support strengthened response to other vaccine-preventable disease outbreaks in the interim. Thank you very much.